720 WGN. It is Dane here with you in for Dean until 1. And on the line, excited to have, you know, we're going to have weather that's going to get up to almost 60. Cannot beat the weather that you have there in Phoenix at Phoenix Raceway. And certainly the action on the track is going to be hot as well. Excited to have on, you know, one of those great leaders on the motorsports side, the president of Phoenix Raceway, the one and only Latasha Causey. Latasha, welcome to WGN.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. It's great to have you. And this is one of those weekends, one of two that you guys have. And we mentioned it when we talked with Alex Bowman a little earlier in the program. He is from Tucson. This is a home race for him, that the track experience there, what you guys have done, certainly on the leadership and hospitality side, but the facilities, right? It's definitely worth the trip.
Absolutely. You know, of course, we renovated Phoenix Raceway back in 2018, but we still like to say it's brand new. It feels new. Our team takes huge pride in just keeping it ready all year long. And we just take pride in showcasing it for NASCAR weekends. And so the vibe in Phoenix is always a good one.
Yeah. And Arizona has a great relationship with Chicago. So many people travel there, spend their springs, their winters there with you guys. And so we feel like it's a home away from home. It is home for the NASCAR Cup Series today with the Shriner Children's 500. Share a little bit about the excitement that's happening there with the fans. The race is just around the corner.
Yes, that's right. We're on our final day of racing today. And I mean, our fans have had just a phenomenal time here at the racetrack. I mean, you know, it's Women's History Month. And so one thing that I'm really excited about is the fact that we have Catherine Lake that will be racing in the Cup Series today as well. And then we've also had just a multitude of activities and engagements with women getting integrated into our sport. So that's one really exciting thing. But then also, I'm actually headed off right now in just a couple of minutes to Daniel's Amigos party. Daniel Suarez is having a party here at Phoenix Raceway for our community at the racetrack. And so it's just a little bit of everything, honestly. And I always like to say something for everyone as well. Here over the last couple of days. And you know, the best part about today is that the sun is actually shining. It was a little rough on Friday with the rain and the wind, but the sun has come through, and we know it's going to be a great day for racing.
Do you have a prediction for Catherine Legg? Of course, there's a lot of El Bandito Yankee fans here in Chicago. She was racing in Daytona with that car, and this is the first time that a woman has raced in the Cup Series since Danica Patrick did it a number of years ago. That's exciting.
Yes, it is very, very exciting. You know, I mean, I want her to get out there and just have a really great race. And Catherine and I were able to meet, of course, for the first time yesterday. And her excitement that she has to be out on the raceway. Of course, she has a little bit of nerves, but that's nothing. You know, that gets her prepared. That gets her really the confidence to get out there and to go. And really, I just want her to get out there and compete and enjoy it. And I know that she's going to do that. She's done a lot to prepare and get ready for today.
NASCAR been so forward thinking on when it comes to women in the sport and their presence and leadership within it. Of course, here in Chicago, Julie Giese is our leader here for NASCAR Chicago Street Race. Talk a little bit about that as a sport where, you know, you guys are in positions of leadership and really making things happen.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I love Julie Giese. If not for Julie, I would not be here at Phoenix Raceway just because of her, our friendship that we've had and all of those things. And so I think that it is a really, honestly, I mean, this is probably one of the best career decisions that I have made as a woman to take over Phoenix Raceway. But it's our obligation, all of us, to continue to integrate more women into our sport, whether that means that they are fans, whether that means that they are working for our sport as well. And so that's something that, you know, myself, Julie, Lori, Don, all of us, it's something that we do, and it's on our list of things of how do we get our girlfriends involved, you know, in racing and in NASCAR.
Yeah, it's such a busy day, and so thankful that you were able to take a little bit of time and jump on for all your fans of Phoenix and, of course, fans of racing and NASCAR here in Chicago. We'll let you get back to it. We know you've got a lot going on, and but Latasha, we'll have links up. We'll hope to see you in the fall, and thanks for jumping on the show today.
Yes, thank you so much. We'll look forward to seeing you in the fall, and we look forward to a great day of racing today.
Yep, good luck. Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Yep, you bet.
Thanks.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have Ray Evernham. You think about him and all the work that he's done, again, a little bit on the racing side, but more on the future side, growing the sport, and a lot of the things that he's done. He's going to share his new book. So keep it here. It's Dane in for Dean, 720 WGN. 720 WGN, high atop Chicago in the Skyline studio, and excited to have on the line one of the most successful and iconic personalities in the world of motorsports, multi-time Cup Series champion, crew chief, visionary pioneer on the car and the ownership side, and best-selling author here with his new book, Trophies and Scars. It's the one and only Ray Everham. Ray, welcome to WGN.
Wow, thanks, Dane. That's I don't know if I can live up to all of that.
What?
That stuff, but man, I appreciate you.
Well, the listeners know I left most of it out, right? There's so much. Your business card, you carry it around. It's one of those giant, like, prize-winning check things that you have with you. You have done so much, so we're excited to have you on. And you think about that, a life that has led to so much that you can have multiple books and so much success and have people excited to be able to hear you and talk about it. We always talk about that, especially here in Chicago, where there are so many new people being exposed to the sport and exposed to NASCAR and imagining and envisioning lives in racing. And for you, as people try to find those commonalities, like, how did it start? You know, you're at Jersey Shore. You wanted to become a race car driver, as a lot of people do. Your path took so many different routes to so many victory lanes.
Yeah, you know, and again, when we talk about that business card, I think the best way to sum that up is I'm like the luckiest guy in the world some days. I always tell everybody I am the Forrest Gump of motorsports, right? You know, just didn't really have that set plan, but just love the sport and love the people and have that passion. And door opened and opportunity came, was not afraid to take it, you know, not afraid to jump, and just looking forward to that next thing. And you know, and again, want to just shout out to the folks out there in Chicago, you know, for embracing the NASCAR race the way they do. I know it's been getting more exciting, but certainly it is that's the way of the future. And for NASCAR to be running on the streets of Chicago, I think that's one of the coolest things that we've done in a long time. So shout out to all those folks out there in Chicago that came out and supported that.
Yeah, we think about it. When the racing bug hits, and people can always kind of pinpoint back to that moment where they knew that they wanted to be in motorsports or a race car driver, and it may be they went to a race and saw it live in person. Maybe they've got family connections and it was there from the start, but you never know where it is going to start or really where it's going to end up. And so one of the things that common connections that we have here in Chicago, Michael Jordan, you know, greatest basketball player, one of those great basketball players, tried his hands at coaching. Great players don't always make great coaches. And part of the things that you cover in this book is how you made that transition from a driver trying to have and make his mark on the track to a teacher and being that great crew chief. And talk a little bit about that transition where you feel you have so much to give, but maybe it's more on the advice side.
I think it's important. If you're going to be a crew chief, coach, whatever, you have to understand the game. And you also have to understand that there are levels of talent. And I felt like I could have been a good driver. And I think I still am a good driver. I'm driving now, not at 100 miles an hour. Still past Dale Earnhardt's place. But, you know, the that fact, when you meet somebody that's special, like I did with Jeff Gordon, or when you're coaching athletes at a top level, you've got to understand that game. You've also got to understand that you, as a coach, can see and do things that come so natural to them that you can help give them the science behind it or the reason to make it better. And I think as much as I wanted to be that racer, I knew deep down inside that I didn't have all of the tools that I needed to do it. But I had the tools that could at least lay out and explain to somebody that had the talent to get better. And I was lucky enough, really lucky enough to have met that. And then, you know, we almost didn't realize the group of overachievers that we had that were the Rainbow Warriors of the 90s. Everyone on that group, you know, just fit. And as I started to realize that in the early to mid-90s, then I knew that my job was just to get all those gears working together and keep that communication going. And as you said, the whole does end up being greater than the sum of the parts, but it takes special people. It takes an unselfish focus or commitment to where the team becomes more important. The team goals become more important than your personal goals. And rarely in life do you get an opportunity to be part of something like that.
Yeah.
And and the Rainbow Warriors of the 90s were that team.
Well, it's amazing that you mentioned, and there are so many people that play a part in the success of a race team. Obviously, and understandably, the drivers get a lot of that credit. The crew chiefs do as well. The manufacturer side, Chevrolet, a lot of success there, and a big part of it as well, so much that they bring to it. Your affinity and association with Dodge, talk a little bit about that, you know, and bringing Dodge back and all of the elements that are built into that in the book.
The Dodge folks were committed to coming back in a big way. They wanted to be successful. They wanted to make a splash in NASCAR. And they were, you know, they got behind getting that thing going. You know, they really did. And what they did by coming up with a car, coming up with a motor, starting 10 race teams, going, making all 10 Daytona 500, finishing in the top five, taking the front row in qualifying, and then winning three races in their first year, pretty phenomenal for a manufacturer. When you look at, you know, how long it took other manufacturers to get going, like Toyota and people like that, you know, that commitment that Dodge had when they came back, in my opinion, was second to none. It was a great experience because, again, he did something that most people didn't think was possible to done in that amount of time. And not only did we, and when I say we, my team and the other teams and Dodge, get it done, But we won races and pole positions in the very first year.
Yeah, you're looking at that. Let the listeners know we're talking with Ray Everham. He is the author of the best-selling book, Trophies and Scars. And I feel like NASCAR is in, you know, one of those pivot points, and we've seen those at least throughout my time covering, of course, your time being in it, where the sport is at a flexion point to be able to reach out, grow the sport, whether it's new opportunities for the sponsor side, whether it's new markets, new fans, and all of that. And I think the book is part of that effort. But talk about your role in sort of paying it forward and trying to understand, to be able to share that history. And you were a part of so much of that great history and be able to create the new history, right, as NASCAR grows and changes in the coming years.
Well, you know, I feel like when you are blessed with the opportunity or a sport is really good to you, that you do have some responsibility to pay that forward, to be a keeper of the stories, you know, the history. So I certainly want to make sure that I am holding, you know, the high regard for auto racing history and telling the stories of the great legends that I've been able to be around. But again, by the same token, you know, I think with all the years that I've had in the sport, I can say with credibility that right now, NASCAR is healthier to me than it's been in a long time. When I look at the things that they're doing with the Gen 7 car, going to street races like Chicago, you know, trying things like the Coliseum in L.A., the young driver supply that's coming in now, you know, these are, they're like kids, you know what I mean? I got driving shoes older than some of these guys that are winning races, you know. And, you know, right now, NASCAR's doing the right things, TV-wise, team-wise. It's grown in the right direction to take it to the next level. Like most sports, you know, we went up like a rocket and kind of leveled out. And now I think the leadership team at NASCAR and the things that they're doing are really moving the ball in the right direction for the future.
You know, we wanted to mention, too, one of the last things is you have been one of those guys that I think they say, what is it? Well, like work-life balance, where you've been able to take the excitement of your career, maintain a lot of that, and then a lot of passion projects and things that you're doing, whether it's, you know, work with the sport or collecting the cars or on the media side, writing the books, and, of course, with the family and the foundation. Talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on now for Ray Everham and things you've really leaned into.
Well, that balance is hard when you are in the fight, right? So I always tell people, like, look, I'm a project guy now. I'm not a long-term guy. You know, I can give you 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, but only for projects, limited time, right? I'm not going to do that for the rest of my life. Again, I want to spend time with my son, and with my daughter. Working on my daughter's big into horses. That takes a lot of time and a lot of money. That's what keeps me working. You know, but, you know, my son, with his autism and the things that he is doing, and he's doing a lot of great things to grow autism awareness and working with the Ignite centers for young adults on the spectrum, you know, creating that awareness and communication. So I want to make sure, balance wise, that I do take the time to enjoy that. I had a great conversation with Mark Martin when we did the IROC thing, and Mark said, you know, when we were racing, man, we were like on to the next thing, and we were so intense. And I saw Mark take an hour and a half and sit on a concrete block and just sign autographs and talk to fans. And he said, I didn't get the chance to enjoy that, to enjoy the connection with the people, to enjoy what I was doing. And, you know, hopefully we can bring some of that back with more of these IROC events, to get these drivers out, to mingle with the fans and make that connection that's hard to make at the racetrack.
Yeah. I mean, you get into it because you love it, because it's fun. The fans love it because it's fun, right? And if you can't, as you are the ones that are generating so much of that entertainment, if you can't enjoy it and make it fun, then there's a problem. So it's great to see you raising awareness for that. And of course, all those higher purpose causes that are built into not only your life, but your life story. And as we let you go, Ray, you know, where can people get the book? I'm guessing, you know, online in bookstores, but if there's events coming up or places you're going to be, or what would you recommend?
Yeah, you know, Amazon's always a big seller for us, but Octane Publishing, you know, they've got, or come to the Ray Evernham Enterprises website. You know, if you order out on our website, say, hey, I want to buy the book, I want Ray to sign it, happy to do it. And then at some of the racetracks, you know, we had a little signing here and there. We did at Lime Rock. There'll be some more announcements coming up as we do more events. But normally, you know, Amazon, Octane, or my website, for the book. And then keep an eye on our IROC stuff, because again we want to try and do more of these IROC reunions and vintage events to connect the fans and the drivers and have a little bit of fun.
Such great stuff, and you can't thank you enough for everything you're doing for the book, for jumping on the show today. We'll have links up for all of it at WGNradio.com. and Ray Evernham, thanks for jumping on the show today.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's always fun. Call me
Ray Evernham, he is just a legend in the sport. Great to have him on that NASCAR side. Done a ton at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And coming up after this break, we're going to have Alex Dameron. He's the chief marketing officer for IndyCar. And, of course, WGN Radio has a close connection with IndyCar, with the Indy 500, and all of that history and pageantry that happens with that. As the listeners probably know, I would hope that they do at this point, is WGN Radio was the first radio station to ever broadcast the Indy 500, and of course, we'll be broadcasting the greatest spectacle in racing coming up. I'll host that pre-race show live from the track as we get closer, and you know, now it's X amount of days in as the excitement will grow. There are some cool things that are happening with Joseph Newgarden down at South by Southwest. Jack, have you ever been to South by Southwest? Are you familiar with what it is? It's like a festival, like an education conference, seminar, festival.
I have not, no.
That's what's supposed to be pretty good.
You know,
and it's got an eclectic blend of topics, too, whether it's tech leaders or even racing. And you're going to get an opportunity to hear about some of the cool things that are happening there from Alex when we come back from this break. So keep it here. It's Dane in for Dean until 1-720 WGN. 720 WGN. It is Dane here with you until 1 p.m. in for Dean, and we've already talked, you know, live from the track at the NHRA in Gainesville starting this season. We've already had Latasha Kazian, president of Phoenix Raceway, as they get ready for the Cup Series race that's happening there. It only makes sense, especially with the pedigree that WGN has with IndyCar, to have Alex Dameron, chief marketing officer for IndyCar. Exciting times to be a race fan. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dane. Happy to be here with you today, man.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you on. And of course, we mentioned it, you know, a couple times, WGN's sort of role in relationship with the Indy 500, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, being the first station to ever broadcast that legendary race. And this is a time, and you've been with the series, with racing, with IndyCar for a long time, a number of years. And I've got to say, based on the transition to Fox, you know, there's always that, you want to say, some growing pains or a transition whenever you get with a new television partner. But right out of the gate, things are going well.
Yeah, it's an incredibly exciting time. You know, frankly, audience for our season opener in St. Petersburg just last weekend, actually, was up 45%. So Fox has done a tremendous job helping to launch IndyCar into a new era. I'm sure a lot of your listeners saw the Super Bowl commercials a few weeks ago featuring Joseph Newgarden, Alex Palou, and Pato O'Ward, some of the stars of the NTT IndyCar series. But it's an exciting time. And, you know, I'll share on top of sort of the viewership metrics, We had a record-breaking three-day crowd in St. Petersburg, a ton of growth across all of our digital channels. So it's certainly a tremendously exciting time to be an NTT IndyCar Series.
Yeah, as a marketing guy, you know, your thoughts, you're always trying to imagine new ways. There's certainly a lot of excitement just built into what they do on the track, but highlighting those personalities. I know the last few years here with the CW 100 Days to Indy, doing a little bit of that, yeah, highlighting those personalities. So kind of share that. Are there things, Alex, that you're thinking, wow, if more of America just got to know these guys, there would be even more fans?
Yeah, there's some amazing personalities, and I think what's awesome about our drivers is obviously they're daredevils on the track. I mean, it takes so much skill and so much bravery to drive a car 230 miles per hour at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But off the track, they're incredibly approachable. They're very interesting. They have a lot of hobbies. And I will say, for anyone who hasn't been to an IndyCar race before, there's a lot of access to them across our race weekends. We do full field autograph sessions. They're walking around the paddock and in some of the fan areas as well. I think you'll find that our guys are about as accessible and interested in interacting with fans as anybody out there, really, in terms of professional athletes, at least.
Yeah, we know that it's tough. It's a very cool job if you have that, whether it's like fighter pilot, race car driver. It's one of those cool things, the element of danger built into every bit of it. And then, of course, the Indianapolis 500, the largest single-day sporting event in the world. It is big, you know, but I don't know that race car drivers always get, and maybe more so more recently, you see them getting at least a little bit more recognition for what they do on the athlete side. These guys are incredible athletes. People think, okay, well, I drive to work every day. I could be a race car driver, just not driving as fast. And that's just not the case. So share a little bit about what it is that they do and just how conditioned they are as athletes.
Yeah, without a doubt. First of all, I got to tell you, we have something called the IndyCar two-seater. I know you've seen it before. Have you done it, by the way, Dane?
I have in the past. I don't know if I've done it at IMS, though.
Well, we can set that up. I think we'll book it right now for you at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But what it is for listeners out there is it's actually an IndyCar with a back passenger seat driven by a professional that simulates the racing experience. I once did it for a few extra laps, stunt doubling for a video at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and I could not believe how sore my neck was the next day. You know, these guys have to have hyper reflexes. They have to be able to train to take insane amounts of G-force, and they have to do it with the mental stamina to make really quick decisions with as many as 32 other cars around them, at least at the Indy 500 for that matter. But the physical fitness that our guys have to maintain across a race season is right up there with any other professional athlete. We've taken some of them to the NFL Combine before. They put up great numbers and figures. So, it's a job that takes 24/7 preparation and a lot of specialty training as well.
Yeah, Alex, one of the things that you're tasked with is taking the drivers, the sport, and bringing it to new audiences that may not already be integrated or be as familiar with racing as you'd like them to be. And I was excited to see this is one of the reasons I reached out to you, South by Southwest. And for people who know what that is, it's an incredible festival. It has a huge range of things, everything from, you know, tech and, you know, whether it's, you know, sports or food or, you know, all sorts of different seminars and informational sessions. And you've built Joseph Newgarden into that. Share a little bit about what's going to be happening this week down there.
Yeah, for sure. Next week at South by Southwest, a lot of people are going to be eating good barbecue and learning about the latest developments in AI, but a select lucky number of people are also going to get to train like an IndyCar driver with Joseph Newgarden. So, you know, all of our guys are in incredible shape, but Joseph is really at the front of the field in terms of his commitment to physical fitness and how much he's made it a part of sort of his everyday life and off-season training routine and such. So Joseph is actually going to be holding a series of select workouts for badge holders at South by Southwest to kind of train like an IndyCar driver. So he's going to walk them through what a typical workout looks like for him. And what I think is interesting is people will see some things that they might want to incorporate into their everyday workout routine. Core strength, for example, is never a bad thing. Cardio is obviously healthy for everybody, but they're also going to see some of the specialty training that an IndyCar driver has to do. So, for example, neck reflexes and neck load bearing to be able to maintain and pull G's in the car is an example of that. And for sure, some of like the precision agility training as well. So I'm actually looking at the list of exercises he's put together with his trainer. I see ski paired with wall ball toss, row paired with push-up, burpee, broad jump, and that's a horizontal pull push for those in the audience who are curious. See some farmer carries with box jumps and some sandbag lunges. So I'm probably going to be eating barbecue on the side, if I'm being honest. If Joseph will let me get away with that, I'm a little worried he's going to ask me to work out with everybody. But seriously, he's in tremendous shape, and I do think a lot of people out there do not realize on the IndyCar side how much these guys stack up as professional athletes. So it is a really exciting opportunity for us to share that with a new audience.
Those are very like creative exercises, you know, the box, you know, carrying and sacks, yeah, and bags and things. It seems like he's sort of, you know, got the life hacks built into trying to replicate some of the needs that happen in the car. I know that when it comes to simulators, as far as like tracks and practicing, it's been a game changer in the world of racing. I know on the stock car side for sure, for road courses, and I'm sure the IndyCar guys are doing a lot of simulators too in order to practice, and it just makes it easier and cost efficient. Do you know any of this? Do they have like the simulators that are able to replicate maybe some of the physical side too, or are they just not there?
No, so they do, and a couple of the best ones are, there's a few of the best ones across the country that most elite professional race car drivers, you know, train with, and those can simulate some pretty tough conditions, and frankly, when you're walking out of them, make you look like you were just on the racetrack. And I know our guys take their simulator time incredibly seriously. You know, it's one of the few things that they won't remove from the calendar because it's just that valuable when you get to work with the best of the best from a technology standpoint there. So, yeah, I mean, if you compare where the sport is at, you know, now 10, 20, 30 years ago, obviously technology has really changed things and allowed drivers to gain a ton of insights and train in new ways. I think on top of the simulator stuff, you know, in addition, many are tracking their hydration levels throughout the weekend. They're using wearable technology to find out how many calories they've lost in the car on a Saturday to see how much they want to add on for Sunday. So it's definitely a new world out there from a technology standpoint, but it makes a ton of difference if you talk to the drivers from a performance perspective.
Yeah, all that work is paying off. It is one of the most compelling, and the competition is right there, the parity. You never know who's going to win. It's exciting racing going on in IndyCar here at WGN. Of course, we talk a lot about the Indy 500. We had St. Petersburg on. We have a number of races on the schedule that we broadcast live right here at the station. So before we let you go, Alex, can you talk a little bit about some things on the calendar you're looking forward to, and then how our listeners can get ready, gear up, and be there for the Indy 500.
Yeah, absolutely. So our next race is March 23rd at the Thermal Club. It's a really unique setting in the Palm Desert. Great place from a television perspective to tune in and watch fast cars with some amazing scenery. The Indy 500 is coming up Memorial Day weekend on Sunday. Seriously, this one's going to be mega. It's going to be can't miss. Joseph Newgarden is trying to become the first person to win three Indy 500s in a row, which is amazing when you consider the event is over a century old. Elio Castroneves is going for a record fifth Indy 500 victory. We obviously got rising stars across the series, and Alex Palou, who's a two-time, twice-in-a-row champion now, going for his first Indy 500. So that's going to be a fierce race where everybody wants to hang it all out on the line and win. I will tell you, the crowd for the Indy 500 is stacking up to be historic. We're well ahead of last year's ticket sale pace. We got really close to a grandstand sellout, which for those people who don't know, we obviously have more than 300,000 people come to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on Indy 500 race day. So when we say sellout, we mean something very different than everybody else, frankly. But we believe a grandstand sellout is within reach this year. And I'd encourage listeners thinking about making the trip down to Indianapolis for the race to definitely get their tickets soon.
Wow, doing a lot of things right. Alex, we'll have the links up at WGNradio.com for people that may make their way down to South by Southwest. Is there a website or social media place for people to keep up?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, you can follow everything on our Instagram at IndyCar and X at IndyCar Channels. In addition to that, if you go to the South by Southwest website and look at event listings, the Joseph Newgarden event will be there. And anyone who is headed to the festival, we do still have a few spots left. You can email marketing@indycar.com to sign up. And you'll see me again on the side eating my brisket while everybody else is carrying their sandbags.
Leading the way on the brisket, and of course on the marketing side for IndyCar, Alex Dameron. Alex, thanks so much. Enjoy the week. Enjoy the weather. And we'll talk soon. Thanks for jumping on the show today.
Of course. Have an awesome day, man. See ya.
All right, we are going to take a break. When we come back, Dave Schwann's far-flung forecast. People who love the show love that. I think, you know, Jack will know this too. We should have a near-flung forecast because the forecast is pretty nice this week. We'll see what Dave has for it. Keep it here. It's Dane 720 WGN. 720 WGN, you hear that music, you know what it means. It is time for Dave Schwann's legendary far-flung forecast. Dave, I was thinking about it. Oftentimes, you know, you'll have information, history, education, little insight for places all around the globe. But from the forecast you've been given for the Chicago area, we might want to keep it close to home.
Well, you're right, because we are having some beautiful weather here. And I was telling Ron Brown here in the newsroom, we deserve it, right? the nice weather that's coming into the 60s, maybe hitting 70 later in the week in some spots. But today, as you said, Dane, we like to talk about some history and information here, and we have just that with our far-flung forecast today. We head down south to Selma, Alabama. Selma, Alabama, in kind of the south-central portion of the state of Alabama, going back well before the Civil War, and in fact, there was a Civil War battle fought there. But we mentioned Selma specifically because it was 60 years ago on Friday where the march to Montgomery, Alabama went through Selma and resulted in what is now known as Bloody Sunday, as about 600 civil rights marchers were moving through Selma and passing over the Edmund Pettus Bridge. They were confronted by some state troopers and authorities who subsequently attacked them. They used tear gas, and it was a very violent confrontation during this Bloody Sunday event. Nearly 70 people were injured, some of them hospitalized, including the late Congressman John Lewis, whose skull was fractured during that event. And then that took place 60 years ago this Friday, this past Friday, March 7th. Today, there are special observances getting underway at that very bridge, the Edmund Pettus Bridge, at this hour in Selma, Alabama, which is our far-flung forecast today. They have cloudy skies and 53 there. They're going up to a high of 59.
Wow, we do very similar weather today for that. And you know, I think most people, students of history or people that are paying attention, are familiar with that. Do you happen to know, Dave, it's an important, you know, as far as the civil rights movement in era, such an important event there, but it's a bridge, right? Not necessarily conducive to a museum. Is there like a plaque on it, or
it's now recognized as a landmark there. It's definitely part of American history, the Edmund Pettus Bridge, which still looks the same as it did pretty much 60 years ago. And also a National Historic Landmark in Selma is the Brown Chapel AME Church, which was a gathering place for the marchers in Selma, getting organized there as they continued that. And this was only one of several marches. There was one a little bit earlier, and then later in the week, that week of March of 1965, Martin Luther King and others went to the city. And also, we should mention that there was a white minister whose name was James Reeb, R-E-E-B, who went to be with those marchers from Boston, killed in that attack by people that were there to confront the marchers.
Pivotal times. And yes. You do so much traveling. It's one of the things that I think listeners love, is that you get out there, you travel, you share those experiences. Would you think that that would be, I mean, if you're in the area, obviously you would probably want to stop by
and
recognize it. But is there like a set, you know, just like Route 66 is sort of an established, you know, path and trip, and there's things along the way. Is there, you know, maybe I don't want to necessarily call it a vacation because I think it's more impactful and important than that, but a civil rights trip that people can take.
Absolutely. And that would be part of it. Don't forget, there was a big 50th anniversary 10 years ago now when President Obama was in office going through there. And he was marching with others across that bridge there, along with John Lewis, who was there for the 50th anniversary. John Lewis passing away several years ago. But as we mentioned, he was part of that march in 1965 in Selma.
I was going to hit you with something because that maybe a little bit out of the ski, but you know, earlier this week, I think yesterday was International Women's Day. Now, is there a location, maybe that could be a subject of a far-flung forecast, maybe have been one in the past or maybe in the future, you don't necessarily need to know it, that is like an official epicenter for women in support. Obviously, women are everywhere, right? You know, it's a big part of every one of us. But is there like a place that celebrated International Women's Day more than others?
There may be some observances in some of the places where the women's suffrage movement was getting started out on the East Coast, and also subsequently, I think somewhere in Wisconsin. I imagine there were a number of places in the 19th century, even like during the times of the Civil War, when women were organizing get a right to vote. Don't forget, you know, that's 100 years ago that finally there was an amendment to the Constitution passed allowing women to vote. But that was 100 years ago. So until the 1920s, you couldn't vote. And there's a number of places that have been recognized with that regard. And I'm sorry, I can't come up with a location right now.
And I don't know that there is one central place. I'm sure there's locations. I mean, every location would be a great place to celebrate that. So when it comes to celebration, this is a big week coming up with St. Patrick's Day and, of course, the toast to Harry Carey. Dave, do you have any your memories of Harry Carey or places or opportunities? Are you going to be a part of that big celebration coming up on the 18th?
I won't be, but I do remember meeting Harry a few times and was just so much fun. You know, he would just greet you and look you in the eye and shake your hand like an old friend. But I do have one quick story for you, Dane. A friend of mine and I took our fathers to a Cubs game for a Father's Day event. It wasn't on Father's Day, but it was around that time. And we took them to the game, and we were having something to eat in the back of Murphy's across the street from the bleachers. And who should pull up in a car and get out but Harry Carey to wave at everybody? Thrilled my father. He was just really, hey, look at Harry.
Oh, my gosh.
So, but, you know, here he is still, after all these years, still one of those great Chicago institutions.
Still being celebrated, just like your dad. And that's one of the things, too. You're always bringing him up and keeping him with the listeners as well. I know that they appreciate that. So, Dave, thanks so much for that. We are wiser now.
Okay, thank you, Dane.
All right, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the toast to Harry Carey. It's been years since Harry passed, but the celebration goes on and is bigger and better than ever. Grant DePorter is going to join us in just a bit, and then we're going to talk with him about the celebration, WGN's role within all that, and the ways that that we're all going to get in on it. Not only our personalities here broadcasting live from there, but so many great and iconic sports figures and actors and just Chicagoans. So keep it here. It's Dane in for Dean, 720 WGN.